and happy Thanksgiving, my friends. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Tim Dennis, still out dealing with COVID. Please continue to send him your best wishes, love, and prayers. But again, I just ask, please do not inundate him with messages, texts, Facebook, emails, looking for response. He's very tired. He always feels he has to respond, and he just needs time to rest. Once he's back on his feet, you can send him all the accolades and love you can stand, or just send him a message, but tell him he doesn't need to respond. Just wanted to lay that out there for you. He is doing treatments to try to help this with the antibodies treatment, I believe. So hopefully he'll get over this. It is taking its toll on him right now. So we're praying for a full and healthy recovery for Tim. So happy Thanksgiving to all of you around the world tuning in today's show. We are actually recording the show live on Thanksgiving. You're listening to it a little bit later, and we want to thank you for that. I want to remind you that tomorrow, Discovery Plus drops a brand new shock doc, Demon in the White House, that begins streaming November 26th exclusively on Discovery Plus. Again, it is not about our past or our present president. It is about the paranormal, the hauntings, the strange things, and have doors been opened from the past that may allow dark things to influence our leadership. So that's something to consider. It's an interesting story and a look back at the supernatural history of the White House. That's tomorrow. I'm a part of that. Jeff Belanger, Joshua P. Warren, many other talking heads, some interesting historical retrospectives. So make sure you check that out. That's The Demon in the White House tomorrow on Discovery Plus. Today, again, if you're looking for something cool to watch, you can always pop on The Curse of Lizzie Borden. That's the shock doc that was released a few months ago that I was a part of. But no, that's not good enough for some of you. You must have a horror movie for Thanksgiving. Well, I happened to stumble upon something completely accidental last night. Halloween is over. Time to put scary things away. But wait, Thanksgiving can be scary too. Check out the movie Thanksgiving. Yes, you heard me. Thanksgiving. This is true Z-level schlock horror. The commercial, the trailer for it looks hilarious. It is dumb fun. I have not yet watched it. This may be something that my daughter and I sit down to watch tonight. I probably will regret it. But when there is a killer turkey on the loose, who is very obviously a Muppet-style puppet of a turkey, sign me up. I got to see what it's like. And I guess they're already up to Thanksgiving 3. So you could even just power load through all of these movies for the holidays. So if that's your cup of tea and you're looking for something weird and scary to check out tonight, Thanksgiving. You're welcome, friends and family. But let's take a look at something a little bit more delicious. Yes, our own Thanksgiving meal. It is a day of giving thanks for that, those things that we are grateful for in our life. And I hope that today, if this is the only day you do it, I hope that you will look towards the things that have made you happy. And I know that in the last 2 years, those things may seem to be less and less, but there are things out there to be grateful for thankful. And I just pray that you'll take the moments to give that thanks and be forgiving to yourself and to the people around you. That's all I'm requesting, so that you can enjoy the holiday and enjoy the new year. All right. One of my favorite things of doing the show is when a friend reaches out and says, "Hey, I've got a topic and I thought it'd be interesting to talk to you, Dave." And I'd love the chance to get together and do this. And especially when that friend is Scotty Roberts. And Scotty has been an illustrator, designer, photographer, and wordsmithy in the advertising and publishing industry for the last 40 years. He studied theology and history, working toward his master's degree in theological seminary. He served as editor-in-chief for Taps Paramag, the Ghost Hunters official rag mag, and on the heels of which he founded and published Intrepid Magazine, which led to Intrepid Radio and the Paradigm Symposiums. He's been a paranormalist for a little over two decades now, and Scotty has several books published through New Page Books, now part of Red Wheel Wiser, Hampton Roads, including The Rise and Fall of the Nephilim, The Secret History of the Reptilians, The Exodus Reality, and The Rollicking Adventures of Tam O'Hare, which has become one of my kids' favorite books. You can find anything you want to know about Scotty at his website, scottallenroberts.com. and also at his YouTube page. We've got both of those links up on today's program guide. I hope you will check those out and support our friends that come by to visit. Read about them, learn about them. If you have not heard from Scotty before, you guys are in for a treat. Thank you for sharing part of your Thanksgiving day here with us, Scotty.
Oh, man, Dave, thanks for having me.
Now, sure appreciate it. When you reach out to me and your pitch is, hey, what do you think about Visions and the Gin? I'm like, I'm in. And I'm literally, that's as far as I needed to read into your email. Of course, the rest was well written and thought out, but I thought this was an interesting thing to discuss. I had Cameron Pasha on our show.
I heard that
3-4 months ago talking about the Gin, and he had a fascinating insight. I know this is something that you're interested in as well. So let's begin on this day of thanks by discussing your topics and where you'd like to go, because I'm not even sure which direction you want to start and or how they may tie together. So let's find out together.
First, let me tell you, I've been working, as it said in my bio, I'm an illustrator, and I've been doing some children's books as client projects. And while I work, I binge listen, and I've been binge listening Darkness Radio for like the last 3 weeks. And so I feel when I got the idea to say, hey, I should message Dave about this, I thought it's because I felt like you've been right here in my studio for the last 3 weeks. And I even talked to you while you're broadcasting. I'm listening to the show. I was like, oh, Dave, that's fantastic. Or wow, that's amazing. And I will tell you this. I'm not just blowing sunshine up your kilt. But the other day when you had your wife on, mm-hmm. and you were talking, I don't know if that was recorded the other day, but I heard it just 2 or 3 days ago. You brought tears to my eyes. Your show is broad and it covers a lot of information and stuff that you don't always think of when people think of a paranormal show. And so I have grown in the last 3 weeks, especially to really appreciate your broadcast, because I'm listening to it. It seems like 6 hours a day. So
well,
there
you go. I appreciate that. I'm glad you found some solace and friendship in this and given a listen. Now, obviously, having kind of a theological background in this and then stepping into the paranormal realm as a researcher and field investigator, you've certainly put yourself out there to not just read about these things, but really invest yourself into exploring this phenomena. What have been some of the biggest aha moments for you?
Oh, my. I think this particular incident I wrote to you about was a big aha moment for me. First of all, if you take it back a little bit in theology, and I was in a very fundamentalist Baptist conservative church and seminary, all the things about ghosts and anything paranormal, it's of course all of Satan. It's a deception of Satan to distract you from worshiping God. And that's what we were taught, and that's what we thought. But as I got more into the paranormal, in very light ways in the late 90s, the early 2000s, I found that there is something more here than what I was told. This isn't just the demonic, or as even like first century church historian Justin Martyr said, it's all diabolical mimicry. And I didn't think that was it. And I think I had some experiences where I had lost some loved ones in life, and I had contacts through dreams, contacts through other things. And let me just put it this way. I would be one of those to claim I am not psychic. I am not intuitional. I'm kind of an inertial, to speak Star Trek speak, I'm an inertial dampener to, it seems, a spiritual activity. But I have found that that's been morphing a bit over the years. This experience that happened to me in Egypt a few years ago was something that has played out beyond Egypt. And it really was an eye opener for me. This whole story starts with, do you remember Philip Coppens from the show Ancient Aliens?
Of course.
He was an author. He had been at the Paradigm Symposium in 2012. And I remember him telling me, I'm feeling tired and dragged out. I'm going to go to the dock when I get home. This was October of 2012. And by December of 2012, he was dead. He had developed a carcinoma of the brain. Heart. I'm sorry. It was angiocarcinoma, a cancer of the heart. And he passed away in weeks and he was gone. And I learned this news on, I think it was the 30th of December. And I heard the news and I stood and I began to just weep. And I remember at the time thinking, why am I weeping like this? Philip was a friend, but we weren't going to get a cottage by the shore or anything like that. I wept, and I wept for days. And as a matter of fact, at the time, a good friend of mine, Micah Hanks, was staying at our house for the holidays, and he and my wife were going to actually call somebody professional to find out what's going on with Scotty, because this went on for days. And every time I'd think about it, I would break down and I was non-functional. And I thought, why the hell am I affected this way by this? And there was one person who gave me a call out of the blue. You may or may not know him, David Weatherly. And
oh, of course,
he's an author and he's a shaman. And he called me and he says, you know, Scotty, you know how I told you years ago how I get messages from spirit sometimes, listening to a radio show or a piece of music or something. He says, sometimes I get direct voices, audio voices. And he said, I was sitting here 10 minutes ago and I heard a voice say, call Scotty. He says, so I picked up my phone. What's going on? And we got to talking. And of course, the weeping started again. I said, Dave, I can't control this. And what is this about? And he stopped and he said, you know, you're going to Egypt for the first time in about 10 days. So this is back in late 2012. We're at the end of the year. And he said, you're going in about 10 days. He says, all I can tell you is this. It's going to change your life forever. And he says, I don't mean just by the travel experience under your belt. He says, go with an open mind and your life is going to be changed. And he was not mistaken at all with that because of the things that happened. And so this whole thing with Philip Coppens and the crying, it all ties into something that happened to me in Egypt that was unrelated to Phil Coppens until later when I found out it actually was kind of related. And this changed my life. And I believe at the same time I had this experience, I sent you some photographs. I took some pictures of where this happened, and it was 6 years, almost 7 years later when I discovered the image in the photograph that I had never seen before. And I remember my initial reaction when I saw that. I went, what the hell is that? That looks an awful lot like weird Bigfoot pictures. And I went, no, Egypt doesn't have Bigfoot. And it started my questing on that. Then I had other people calling me, psychics I know, mediums I know. What are you doing? Sarah Soderlund, who's a good friend of ours, called me a couple days later after I discovered that photo and said, what are you tampering with? What are you conjuring? Something from Egypt. I said, I'm not conjuring anything. And what are you talking about? And so if there is something that really changed my life in a different perspective, now there I see you've got that photo up. In the background, for those who can see that, I was sitting on a stone. It's the big, long stone way in the background of the picture, just before the sand dune. There's a big, long, kind of light-colored stone. I was sitting there just chilling, and I had something I am not given to. I had a vision. And where we're sitting here is the Hebsed Court, just next to the stepped pyramid of Djoser. Which is in, it would be, if it was in this picture, just off the left. It's sitting right over my shoulder when I took this picture. Well, I'm sitting there, and this is a courtyard. You see the ruins of that small chapel in the background. These were lined on both sides in its heyday, 4,000 years ago. And so they're all crumbled down. A lot of the archaeology is now stacked in the middle out on the, what was it, like a little parade ground. It's about the size of a soccer field, an indoor soccer field. And so, or a basketball court is probably more accurate. And so as I'm sitting there, looking at the ruins. There's nobody else there, by the way. The everything had been shut down. This was in 2013. And it was after the stuff in Tahrir Square and all of that, the revolution. And so nobody's there. There's no tourists. The only people there are Galabeya wearing, they call them the guardians. They're villagers that come. They're hired by the Ministry of Antiquities to watch these sites. And a Galabeya is just the, you've seen them, pictures of them, the long-sleeved to the ground robes that the men wear, usually white or light blue, sometimes black. And so I'm sitting there and John Ward is walking around somewhere wearing a tweed jacket and a fedora and an umbrella over his arm, as most Brits do. And everything changed in the blink of an eye. This courtyard was empty. It was just the sandy floor. All the little chapels that were cove topped on both sides of this court were all brand new. There were big, long torches from way up in the top. Torch would hang at about 8 to 12 feet. Stabs with torches at the end. And the lighting shifted. It wasn't broad daylight like this. It was like 4:30 in the afternoon in November. The shade came down and long shadows. And walking toward me, sitting on that stone way in the back, was a line of what I identified as priests. The shirtless, they were all shaved bald, they had the white kilt on, and they were all carrying trays with different sized jars and things like that. And about halfway to me, they turned, if you're looking at that photo, they turned dramatically to their left to walk to the other side of the parade ground. I could feel the breeze. I could hear the chanting. I could smell incense burning. And as fast as that had started, it ended. And I blinked and I was like, what the fuck was that? That was my immediate response. Right. And because, like I said, I'm not given to this kind of thing. I don't seek visions. I don't get them. It's not my thing. Now, mind you, this is about 2 weeks after that conversation with David Weatherly as well, and the death of Philip Coppens. And so I saw this vision. I didn't know what to make of it. I was tearing up, not from emotion, but you know when you get the chills that run way up your back and the backs of your arms, all of a sudden your eyes water up, and you're like, whoa, what's in the room? That's what was happening to me. Now, I got up from there and I walked over to the vantage point where I took this photograph, which is the porch of one of these little chapels on the side of the Hebsed Court. And if you look really close in this picture, something I didn't notice when I took it, if you could go back for anybody who's watching to that previous photo.
Right. And just for people that know, we are doing a StreamYard video of this as well. So you can always head over to the Darkness Radio Facebook page. So for those of you listening along, Scotty's giving you a very eloquent description of the location and everything. But should you want, I will have these pictures up at darknessradio.com under the news tab. You'll see the pictures that we're referring to up close. But if you're watching the video on YouTube, you're seeing these as we go along. But I put up the
there's a little diagram, overlay,
right? Diagram of where you were, what's going on, and how this looks, and then we will go back.
Okay, and that's the Hebsed Court. Now, in this photo, for those who can see it, and I'll try to describe it for those of you who only listen, I was sitting on a stone, and this was taken in 2013, January of 2013. Now, it wasn't until 2 years ago, as I was looking at this picture, because a good friend of mine, you know, Howie Noel Deshaun, the cartoonist, his wife was going to Egypt and she called me and said, we're going to Saqqara. What's there? And so I pulled up these photos to show her. And as I blew it up, I start scanning over to the left, way over where you see the stonework coming up on the left in the foreground, partially obscured. I see this figure, like a shoulder going down to a hip, and an arm and hand and fingers, all almost totally black. And Dave put up just now one of the closer shots of it. And I thought, what the hell is that? And my first reaction again was, as I saw it, without even thinking about it. I said, that looks an awful lot like those Bigfoot pictures that you see. And I don't think there's any Bigfoot in Egypt. And so not that I know of anyway, maybe up in the Delta, who knows? But I saw this picture. I looked at it. I sent it to a couple of people. One was Chris Conway, who's a good friend of ours. He was in Egypt the next year after this photo was taken. He was in Egypt with us. And he's psychic medium. He used to be for a couple of seasons on Most Haunted, the Brit show where all the women scream. And he looked at it and he says, I think you've got something. That's not the man that contacted you, because a year later he got contact on the same spot from an ancient Egyptian for me. And that's part of the story I'll get to. But I showed this to David Weatherly, and David Weatherly thought we're looking at jinn here. And let me preface that by saying, remember I mentioned all the Egyptians that were there, they were men that wear the galabeas, the long sleeved white or light blue or gray, sometimes black garments that drop all the way to the ground. And then you see this, it looks like a rather muscular shoulder with an arm, a bare chest, and the fingers. And I thought, what am I looking at here? And that next picture you showed up, I just did a diagram to show where I was standing and how I saw this figure at the angle I was at, emerging from behind the stonework. And then I didn't see it when I took the picture, but I stepped down a few seconds later and took a photo in the same direction just to show the back end of the Hebsed court. And you see part of the beginnings of the pyramid over in this picture. But and there was nobody there, and there was no way for anybody to rush in there. So all of these things started to make me question. Then, of course, I had Sarah Soderlund say, what are you conjuring? I said, nothing. She said, I get something ancient Egyptian that you're conjuring up. And then I told her about this photo and showed her. And she said, I don't know what that is exactly, but this is what's going on. You're conjuring something up by speaking of it. Now, all of this happened. I had the vision, which I'm not given to, rattled me emotionally. A week later, on this same trip, John and I went to Luxor. This picture, by the way, with this being and where this is all in Saqqara, which is where the stepped pyramid is. And it's about 30 miles, you know, southwest of Cairo. And there's the stepped pyramid for anybody who wants to see it, can see it. And so a week later, we're in Luxor, and we went to visit the funerary temple of Hatshepsut. And at this temple, Hatshepsut was the female queen who became a female pharaoh, who was the queen. Her husband, Tutmosis II, had died early, and she, the three-year-old boy, Tutmosis III, was the pharaoh-to-be. And she took over as co-regent, then eventually just as pharaoh. And she had elevated a man named Senenmut, which, by the way, in one of my books, I write a lot about Senenmut. I believe Senenmut was the biblical Moses. Now, we don't have to get into any of that. Trust me when I say, trust me, it's the truth. but I wrote a whole book about it. But Senenmut was her grand vizier. He was a commoner that she had elevated. That's all we know about him in Egyptian history. He was a commoner. And she elevated him, named him Senenmut, which meant mother's brother. I, your mother, am elevating you to the status of brother to the gods with me. And he became, in Jewish literature, he became a great general, a conquering general. He was a great nobleman, but around age 40, totally disappears off the Egyptian scene. But he left, he's the one who built this funerary temple. He also became the grand royal architect, and 92 other titles she gave him. He built this tomb for her, and he also placed one of his own tombs. He had a couple of unfinished, unused tombs. One of them is in the...
And who doesn't, really?
Yeah, who doesn't? I got a couple of my own. I'm trying to remember what states I left them in. He built a tomb for himself. It would be now, as you approach her funerary temple, often what you might call a coulee off the side, down into the ditches off the side of this road, and then up into the Theban rock face to the Theban mountains there. And so you can go down in there to his tomb, which is what I had done, because this is my guy I was writing about. This was my Moses guy. And so I remember standing in front of his tomb, broad daylight, and I lit a cigarette. I mean, it was this nonchalant, this cavalier. And I just said out loud, I said, "So, Senenmut, are you Moses? Moses, are you Senenmut? Did you even exist the way we were taught you existed?" And at that moment, it was like out of left field. I was just like, whoosh, just hit with something. I dropped the cigarette in the sand and I'm weeping. And it's just rolling off my face, off my chin, dripping into the sand. And as I had done a few weeks earlier, when I learned of Philip Coppin's death, I remember waving my arms and saying, "What the fuck am I crying about?" I had no idea why I was struck with this, and I'm weeping. And I finally sat back down. I went back up to where John and Maria were, my archaeologist friends, and Maria said, she's Swedish in her sweet little beautiful Swedish voice. She's Scottish. She says, "Here, I'm an academic. Back in Sweden, I am a witch." She says, "You go back down to the tomb and you sit down and ask for clarity," which is what I did. And I will share this with you. Let me turn away from the mic for a second because I'm grabbing something on my bookshelf. I have in my hands a little journal, a leather journal that I would carry in my cargo pockets when I go to Egypt. It's got all kinds of little bits and pieces of things in here and plants I nipped off and stuff like that. And I have something that I wrote when I sat back down there to try to gain a little clarity. And here's what I wrote at the time. So give me a moment to find the right page.
Certainly. Yeah.
I could have prepped this ahead of time, you know, but no.
Yeah, who's got time for that on a busy day like Thanksgiving?
Right. Okay, that's not it. It's in here. Hang on. I know it's
in here. And again, folks, the photographs, the imagery will be up at darknessradio.com under the news tab, so you can see the stepped pyramid. You can see the long view, the closer view, the close-up of this strange figure. I'll even include the photographs from the different perspectives that Scotty had and kind of the overview diagram of Hetsepkort, so that way you can see where he was standing in relation, what was going on. So everything we've talked about will be available for you to see. For those of you watching on StreamYard, ta-da, they're right there in front of you as we're discussing them. So there you have it.
All right. Well, here is what I wrote when I went back. I sat on the ground in the sand in front of Senenmut's tomb. And I wrote this. It's in my journal. It's dated Tuesday, February 4th, 2013, at TT353, which is the number of the tomb. I said, "I'm sitting in the sand outside the unused tomb of Senenmut. I stood in this little natural grotto and was overwhelmed with emotion, not sure precisely why. Tears, many tears. I'm not even sure if Senenmut is Moses. I'm not even so sure that Moses even exists as I was taught. But someone is here. Someone grabbed my emotions, and I don't want to let them go." And that's when I did a little sketch. That's what I wrote in my journal at the moment, that a little bit after this had happened. And so I didn't have a lot of understanding of what that was all about. And it wasn't until, fast forward now about a month or 6 weeks, and I'm home, and I get a call from Philip Coppin's widow, his wife. And we were talking, and I said, "You know, I never expressed to you how I felt about Philip's passing." And I told her, and then I said, "You know, this is what happened the day I learned." I told her the story I just told you about the weeping and the crying and not sure why it was treating me that way. And I said, for the first time, I really put these two things together, because I said, you know, the same exact thing happened to me at the tomb of Senenmut a few weeks ago. And she kind of did the audible gasp, and she said, did you say the tomb of Senenmut? And I said, yes. And she said, remember at the Paradigm Symposium, I told you Philip and I were traveling to Luxor, Egypt, about the same time you were going to be there and we should meet up. I said, yeah. She said, well, do you know why we were going? She said, we were working on a book together on the relationship between Senenmut and Hatshepsut, the queen, the pharaoh. She said, did you know that Philip believed that he was a reincarnation of Senenmut? So I didn't know that. And she said, what time of day did this happen to you? And I pulled out my journal. I said, what I read, just read you. And I said, well, that was on February 4th. And again, another audible gasp. She said, my God, she said, do you know what happened to me on the very same day? She said, Philip's brother and I were in Scotland leading a tour, and that Philip was supposed to have led, but of course he passed away. She said, we're leading this tour. And she said, we were having coffee in the room, and Philip appeared physically and moved something on the table and vanished. She said, a cold, stark, hard physical apparition of Philip. And this happened at the very same time I was having this experience in front of the tomb of Senenmut. And of course, I didn't know what to make of all this. I start trying to piece all of this stuff together over the years. And this whole issue with the djinn plays into this in kind of an awkward way, but it's there. Because I was thinking, when I was a week earlier, I had been at Saqqara and had that vision. Then a week later, I had the experience at Senenmut's tomb. We were also, we spent about 10 days on the Nile on an old dahabeah, like a Victorian era boat with all the cabins down below, just our crew and our team. And we're going down the Nile for about 10 days. And we were doing some paranormal stuff. We had Chris Conway was there with us. He was doing table tipping and reading cards and all of this kind of stuff. And we kept getting something that kept pointing to me, kept talking to me, kept wanting to give me a name. Now, this is, I'm sorry, I hope I didn't mix this up or I'm confusing. I mean, this is now a year later after this experience. I was back with a bunch of people that we brought along to redo this trip, and Chris Conway was one of them. He sat on this stone with me where I had the vision and said, I'm getting, and he with his Scottish accent, you know, I'm getting, he says, an ancient Egyptian man, and he's naked. I said, great. I said, I have the great Chris Conway picking up somebody that's connected to me in Egypt, ancient, and he's naked. But what am I to make of that? And he says, well, he says, not really naked. He says, he might be wearing a nappy. I said, I don't know what's worse, a naked ancient Egyptian man or a naked ancient Egyptian man wearing a diaper.
Right.
And he says, well, probably a loincloth or something. So we were laughing a bit about that. And he said, he's a man that says he is connected to you, that he will always be connected to you, but he will never leave Egypt. It's only when you are here, he will be connected to you. And he asked his name. He says, he won't give me his name. He said, he doesn't want to give you his name until he knows he can trust you. He says, but he is drawn to you because he said, you think the way he thinks. He says, I'm picking up. He says, he was an official of some kind, maybe a physician, maybe something. He says, I don't know for sure. He's not letting me know, but this guy is definitely here. And then of course, it was when I had that vision, and he's saying he's the guy that gave me the vision, he's telling Chris. But then when I find that photo a few years later, I'm wondering, is this him? Is this the guy in the photo? And I asked Chris about that, and he says, I'm not getting that it's the same guy. Now let me back this up, because I think that this is a great way to kind of preface this whole thing about the djinn. When I was with John Ward and Maria Nilsson at their dig site at Gebel El Silsila, about 100 miles south of Luxor on the Nile, it's an old quarry site back into dynastic and pre-dynastic times. And we're on the big dahabeah, the same boat that they use as their dig house when they're there. for the season. And all of a sudden, one of the Egyptian workers from the village comes running in off of the rocky shore, jumps on the boat, starts heading down for the hold where they all sleep at night. All the Egyptian workers have bunks down in the hold. And he's yelling that he had seen a djinn in the rocks. And he was getting the hell out of Dodge. Yeesh. And then within 5 minutes, every single Egyptian worker came piling onto the boat off the shore because there's a djinn, there's a djinn. And they all go down. What do the rest of the afternoon and night? They smoke shisha all night long down in the hold. And I don't blame them. And so, you know, we're out there and we kind of step out on shore. We're just kind of looking around, having a smoke and a drink, and we don't notice anything. But so this is a story. This is the belief system that is there in Egypt. This is how even the locals today believe about these things. And so that happened, and it kind of set the stage in my mind for how people react to this. And I was talking to some of the scholars, the man named Momin Saad, who is Inspector General, I think is his title, of the Karnak Temple Complex in Luxor. He's hired by the Ministry of Antiquities, PhD. And we're talking on the boat with a couple of the other archaeologists. And I said, how do you feel? You're a scientist. How do you feel about this stuff, about djinn, about... And he goes, oh, very real, Scotty, very real, he says. And he started to proceed to tell me about spells they made with horse sweat and stuff like that and all these things that they do. Another one, a French archaeologist, talked about feeling the presence. He's traces the hieroglyphics and refines them and publishes them in the book. And he was there working, and he said, he's a, you know, academic, dry, you know, very matter of fact and to the point. He talks about, I'll be out there some days in these shrines doing the tracings, he says, and you feel it all over you. I went out one day with a full camera. They were all working over on the other side of the river, on a Tiberius Caesar era mound that was over there in front of the quarries. And I was going down from shrine to shrine on the west bank of the Nile, taking pictures and recording and doing recordings of all this. And I got about maybe 10 shrines down, maybe a half an hour after I had left the boat with full battery, and all my batteries went dead. Broad daylight. And of course you can say, well, maybe I'm just taking too many pictures, but my camera should last 6 hours, not a half an hour. So I had to walk all the way back to the boat. I got charged up new batteries and went back out and shot some more. So I've had experiences. Now, getting back to this whole thing of the vision, the djinn.
Let's do this. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll discuss more about this vision, the djinn. What does Scotty make of this? Why, given this gift, was it because he was being prepared for this connection with an old friend, a friend that was a lot older than he even expected? We'll discuss that and more. Stay tuned. And remember, folks, we've got a brand new event. Darkness Radio presents Hell Frozen Over, the Holzer Files. Shane Pittman and myself, January 7th through the 9th at the very haunted Palmer House Hotel in Sauk Center, Minnesota. You can come see us live there. There are general admission tickets left for our talks and meet and greet. If you're interested in coming out, meeting me, Bill Chappell, Shane Pittman, Jamie Houck, the medium, we'll all be on hand. You can get general admission tickets still available at darknessevents.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more here on a special Thanksgiving edition of Darkness Radio. All right, you got time to kill the next few days. 4-day weekend for many of you. Remember to check out Holzer Files Season 1 and 2 now on Discovery Plus. That's Holzer Files, the TV show Shane Pittman, myself, Cindy Kaza are part of. And you can see the first two seasons of that on Discovery Plus. And if you subscribe, you can get it commercial free. There are two options, $5 for the regular subscription with commercials, $7 without commercials, and it gets you all of the different programs under Discovery Plus's umbrella. I think there's like 20 different channels, and you are going to find everything from home improvement to cooking to paranormal to true crime, everything under one umbrella. But Dave, it's another $7. I'm not giving $7. I'll tell you what, try the free trial. See how much is on there. You may realize that everything you love to watch is available under one umbrella for $7 a month, commercial free. That may help you clip the cable cords very quick. So check it out. At least do the free watch and watch the Holzer Files when you do it. You can also see my Shock Doc, The Curse of Lizzie Borden. And again, this Friday, tomorrow, you guys will be able to tune in and check out a brand new Shock Doc I'm a part of, Demon in the White House, streaming November 26th, exclusively on Discovery Plus. It'll be there in perpetuity. So if you don't get a chance to watch it tomorrow, it will still be there. But make sure that you tune in and check that out. Be a part of it with us. I also want to make a quick mention, folks. The holidays are upon you. If you are a fan of Darkness Radio and the Holzer Files, both myself and Shane from Holzer Files have cameos. If you're not familiar with what Cameo is, go check out cameo.com. You can look up Shane Pittman. You can look up Dave Schrader. And it's a chance to get a personalized greeting for you or a loved one for the holidays, special occasions. Maybe you want us to help you break up with that insignificant other. Maybe you want to break the news to your significant other that you're expecting a baby. Maybe you want to break news to your ex-lover that you're expecting a baby. We'll deliver all the news fit to be delivered. So all you have to do is go check out cameo.com. Look up Shane Pittman or Dave Schrader, and you can book us for a cameo. We've got quite a few in the hopper. We usually have them turned around within about 24 to 48 hours where you get a chance to see and review the videos for yourself, and it's direct contact with us. I hope you'll check that out at cameo.com. I do want to remind you that we are sending out prayers and healing requests for our good friend, Tim Dennis. He is dealing with COVID right now and is having a hell of a time. If you have the thought to put in some prayer and positive energy, if you are a healer, a Reiki practitioner, and can send some positivity and love and light in his direction, that would be greatly appreciated as well. We thank you for that. Our guest today, Scotty Roberts. We're talking about visions and the djinn. And Scotty has been telling us a fascinating story and experience, a loss that led to an awakening, if you will. And it's pretty powerful, amazing story. Scotty, just in review with this, you know, obviously you're a spiritual man. You know that there's a connectedness in this universe. I know you're also a healthy skeptic regarding things. You don't just jump at face value. But to have these kind of anomalies, these kind of synchronicities and things lining up. Honestly, how does this start to impact you in the moment and now years later?
Well, I saw this start to manifest in different ways over the next couple of years. Right away, as it happened, you don't really know what's going on. I had John's wife, who is PhD archaeologist at their site, the head of the mission. And she told me that not long after this happened, we were still in Egypt, as a matter of fact, so just a couple of weeks later, that she was getting visions of a little girl who was holding out her hand saying, "You're almost there. Just give me your hand and I'll take you the rest of the way." And I was like, what does that mean? And so I had several psychic types, medium types, it seemed, that had this kind of information. David Weatherly pitched in on this, and he said there's something there to look into. And one way that there's actually two little stories I saw that really confirmed that something wasn't just attached to me in Egypt, only as I was told through Chris Conway, he'll only be connected with you when you're in Egypt. But also back home, I remember I was laying in bed at John Ward's house, John and Maria's house in Luxor, and in the wee hours of the morning, before I went home, I heard what sounded like somebody playing on a little wooden flute at about 3 a.m. And I asked John, did you hear this? And John, of course, mercilessly mocked me about this. And then, funny enough, about a year later, said, we heard your flute player. It was coming through the house. Ooh. Now, what that was, who that was, we don't know. It was nobody local there in his little neighborhood out in the sticks of Luxor. And so now I'm back home. And the first little story was I was talking to a couple of guys who interviewed me on the radio. And I mentioned Sen and Mut, and I mentioned that I had an experience, but not in the detail that I told you. And as we're talking late into the night, it was about 2:30 in the morning. These two guys and I, just not on radio, just talking about it. To my side, my left, a whole stack of items, papers, a little box of something, this and that, all shifted. And I saw it shift, and I looked, and nothing fell. Nothing, it was in the same exact order that it was in on the desk side. It had just shifted down off the top of the little plate holder there and down onto the level of the desk, and the whole stack was still there. And we were talking where I was hearing knockings and things like this while I was talking about the djinn and talking about this experience. And now the big one was a couple of friends of mine, John Ward and Rocky Stucci. We were going to investigate a house in South Minneapolis over in the Lake District. And Rocky said he had been there before. And he says, so why don't you guys, if you want to take a few minutes to say a prayer or call for protection or whatever. So we're pretty quiet in the car going down Interstate 94. And I actually reached out to this person in Egypt. Now, this was about a year after this had happened. And I said, look, you told me through Chris Conway that you would never leave Egypt, but that you would always connect me when I was in Egypt. I said, I'm going to take a long shot here. And I said, I feel almost goofy asking it. You know how that is, Dave. It's like, right. if I can reference, when I was watching you with the special you did in Lizzie Borden house, mm-hmm. and you had the automatic writing, and you were talking about how uncomfortable that felt. You would never experience it. This is the way this stuff feels to me. It's like, I know a lot of people, good people who do this, but I'm uncomfortable with it because I don't see it. I can't tangibly touch it until it touches me. And so here I'm in the car and reaching out mentally and saying, if you can actually reach out and do you offer, can you give me some protection against anything that might be in a bad way for us tonight? Can you do that from where you are in Egypt? Can you even hear me? And you know what I felt? And I can only explain this to somebody who's experienced things like this, like you did with the automatic writing and all of this. Otherwise, it's just a story to other people. But I could feel a man, I have to identify it as a man, a big figure, like the statues you see in Egypt, where his chin was on the top of my head and these big broad shoulders and big arms enfolded me around my chest, like holding me like I have you in protection. And so like this little bust I have of Sen and Mut right here in my office where he's got his arms around the little Princess Nefruri and his chin on the top of her head. This is what it, I don't know if it was drawing images psychologically from my mind, but I physically, Dave, felt this. And I went, wow, whoa, whoa. And it was so moving. It was so visceral and so real that it drove me to more than anything to quiet. And I felt this presence like you are protected. And I saw the definite Egyptian factor in it, the Egyptian motion of the arms, of the chin over the head, and things like this. And I just said, thank you. I said, and I was pretty convinced it was this guy. And now these experiences have shown me that there are things that have stretched beyond the actual experience I had in Egypt. I have had other psychics. Now, you know, because of the business you're in, how many times do you, and not to offend anybody, so I'm not saying, not thinking of anybody in specifically, right. But if I had a dime for every time somebody came up to me with a drink at a bar and an event and said, I'm psychic, I would right. have already retired to the Caribbean somewhere and be drinking mint juleps,
mm-hmm.
but, or rum. And, I had all kinds of psychics coming out of the closet, defining people that they see in my life that are of this mystical, spiritual nature, and very Egyptian connections. And, so I kept seeing this influence over and over again. Now, taking it to the jinn, I had done a big series on my own show on the jinn. And, I had deliberately not read anybody's books on the jinn because I wanted to do a little research of my own without reading an interpretation so much. I came across a guy, I can't remember his name, I'll look it up for you sometime, but he had had experience a couple of times with jinn, and he gave experience of this, and his background made him very qualified to talk about this stuff. And he talked about them. We tend to hear about the jinn as being like beyond the demonic, you know, they're the original, you know, dark entities, the elementals, the all of these things on the planet that have darkness about them.
Right. The OG look, dark force. Yeah,
exactly. And they're like think of the Celtic Fae, how they could be very sweet and loving and benevolent, and they could also be very dark and tragic and evil. They're the ones that would steal your children at night because they loved them. And in the mythology. And so this is what the jinn, and he talks about the jinn being these powerful beings that are not the demonic. And he actually sat and had a conversation with a jinn, and he related this back and how the jinn are nothing to toy with, nothing to tamper with, because they can be very dark and very evil. But at the same time, they acknowledge. I remember he asked the jinn, he said, is there a God, a creator? And the jinn answered back, well, not so much in the same way that you would define it. We refer to him as the originator. And the originator made us. The originator made everything. And they could, again, be benevolent or be evil. And so I never wanted to be one that would reach out to something dark and say, can you come and be part of my life? I don't want that. I would rather see it at an arm's length, be able to research it. I don't want anything attaching itself to me in a negative way. So I always tried to be very careful about that. But I would reach out to communicate. Can you communicate with me? Can you talk with me? Can you... And the experience I have is either very deceitful because it's not been an evil one at all. It hasn't been overt, like, oh, I've got this catalog of all these conversations experience. So I don't. I have a few stories and a few things that have happened that I chalk up to this event. These photographs I showed you at the beginning of this story are photos that I've had a couple of very good qualified people look at. David Weatherly was one who said, yeah, this is definitely jinn that you're seeing in this photograph. And he said, be very careful, he told me. I said, I am. The scene of Indiana Jones throwing his revolver into a suitcase. Besides, you know what a careful guy I am. Not that you
exactly,
can, you know, not that you can gun down a jinn, but you know, you get the point. And so the way this has all shown itself to me, first of all, it has solidified in more ways for me that ethereal exists in many different ways than we think it does. Learning more about the jinn and finding out perhaps my religious views, which have always been Christian, I have drifted far from that on a faith level for different reasons, for my problems with scripture or my problems with this in history or that. And yet I haven't thrown out the baby with the bathwater, but I am finding that there is so much else. And all of these things are talked about even in the Old Testament scriptures and places like that, that are so obscured, you have to look for it and dig it out and do linguistic research and so on. And so what it has done to me, it's changed me in the sense that not just having experienced ghosts, which I have for, or spirits, which I have for many years, different acts of things that have happened, different stories, things showing up, doors being closed, drawers being open. One night I was looking for a rubber band and I couldn't find one back when in my single days. And I'm digging around, couldn't find one. I got up in the morning, nobody's in the house, put on my shoes, and what's in the toes of my shoes? 30 rubber bands crammed in the toes of my shoes. And there's nobody else in the house. So things like that, I've experienced that ethereal. And by the way, I wasn't like smoking something and accidentally stuffed my shoes full of rubber bands.
Likely story.
So, yeah, that's your story. So
do you think, I'm curious, yeah, actually capturing a photograph of Jen, right? That seems to be an extremely rare instance. I've heard people seeing and witnessing, and again, I'm posting up the pictures right now, so if you're playing along at home and watching on the YouTubes and social media, there's the first picture. You'd have to look off to the left behind those bricks. The second picture, there's a closer view of it than the actual close-up. Do you have any fear? I mean, the old concept was, in a lot of indigenous races still believe that in taking a photograph, it somehow steals a piece of your soul. Do you think in just having this image, does it tie you to this creature?
I have thought about that, because it was after 2 days after I discovered this image, and I had Sarah Soderlund calling me and saying, "What are you tampering with? What are you conjuring?" I said, "Nothing." And she said, "There's something from Egypt that you've been calling the last 2 days." I said, "I've been calling no one." And then I showed her this picture and she said, "That's it." And again, not so defined, but I look at that and I wonder about that, because I always wonder about the objects that we have that we pick up that, I mean, look at Johnny Zaffis. He's built a whole career as the godfather of the paranormal on a museum filled with objects that carry spiritual things. I don't know what to believe about all that, because I don't have any. Like, is this coffee cup haunted? I don't know. But you might be onto something that I haven't thought about this photo. I've got this photo. Now, does that draw it back in? That is a curious question. One thing I will say is this. I want to go back there. This might sound very dangerous, so I hope I'm understood on this. Let me know what you think of this. You think I'm a fool, or if you think that there's something worth experiencing here. I thought, I don't crave spirits. I don't want, when I've known there have been spirits in my house, I say, look, you're welcome here. You scare my kids, I will have you removed. You can make contact with me, but don't float over my bed at night. I will pee my sheets. And the same thing with this.
Right. Don't tell them you're going to do that. That just incites them to want to see it.
Probably. Watch what we can do. Watch this guy. But I crave the experience of, would I be able to see a jinn and communicate with it, or see a spirit? I've seen spirits and communicated with them. I know that exists. There is that perhaps morbid, perhaps irresponsible curiosity that says, I would probably shit my pants, but I wouldn't mind encountering. I'm sorry, I've been a little crass here today.
I understand.
To encounter a jinn, once you get over that initial shock value of that, is it worth the experience to say, like this guy that whose accounts I read, can I experientially communicate with one? I want to learn something. I want to know something. This is the big issue of faith with me, and I know faith is defined by the things that you can't see, and it's the evidence of things unseen and so on. But I want to know why I believe things I believe. I want to know what exists there. I don't like this. I'm so frustrated with, and maybe you share this in a sense, that idea that we can experience things lightly. Or even as the Apostle Paul said, we see as through a glass darkly. We see things, but we can't really define everything. And why is there not that quintessential? Is that what happens when you die? Oh, whoosh, I've got the knowledge now of how this works. Is there any way in this lifetime of saying, I want to experience you. I want to speak with you. I want to converse with you. I want you to tell me something I don't know without scaring the pants off of me.
Right.
So in a way, the next time I go to Egypt, I want to go back to this place again and see what I can experience there. Not to be irresponsible with it, not to be weird about it, not to be off the deep end, but to say there's got to be something I can experience beyond these superficial stories where you look back. You know, you just mentioned it on a show I was listening of yours the other day where you said it's that whole fight or flight. Right away, the brain starts to try to explain away what you've just experienced. And I don't want that. I want it so solid that I know it exists, but I don't want it so solid that it taints my brain, you know, or you know, I develop a twitch for the rest of my life or something. You know, I don't want that, but I hope you get what I mean by that.
Oh, I completely do. It's interesting, right? Because we are open to these facets of the supernatural, the preternatural, yeah. Something that's outside of our normal existence. It is an adrenaline rush. It's the roller coaster of the afterlife, yes. that want and desire to have those moments. But then sometimes when you're confronted with them, it can leave you scratching your head with even more deeply impactful questions surrounding your actual existence here on Earth,
right?
And more. So it's kind of an awkward situation. But I love the fact that these questions remain and hang. I think that's part of it. And I wonder if creatures like the djinn, like the fey folk, like Bigfoot, like aliens, if they're there to challenge us, to make us question, that we don't absorb and just become part of the matrix and forget to exist outside of our doldrum of, you know, get up,
yes,
go to work, you know, and come home and go to bed and start all over again. Maybe these moments are there for us to find a spark, to find a reason to examine bigger concepts and get out of the ego of who we are and more into what are we a part of.
Oh, man. You know, that's something I have thought a lot about lately, because while we have to live and exist, and I've said many times, we all have to get up. We got to go to work. We got to get the kids off to school. We got to mow the lawn. We got to pay the internet bill. We got to do this and that and the other thing. And we get so lost in the motions of living a corporeal life, mm-hmm, that we forget about the other side of things. And I've said for a long time, I don't believe in the supernatural. I believe that everything is natural. It's just what I haven't experienced climbing to the top of Mount Everest, and I haven't experienced talking to a djinn over a cigar. You know, those are two things I haven't experienced in life, but one doesn't not exist and the other does. And so I look at this, and where it's changed my life, I've said to my wife many times, now you're a married man, and all of you out there who are listening that have spouses, you all know you can sometimes get an idea and you're like, oh, honey, I got to share this. It's deep. And your wife is like, yeah, can you pick up meat while you're at the store getting milk? Sure, sure. So they don't always, it's not that they don't. Yeah, that's not all the time. My wife is pretty fixed by this stuff, or pretty into this stuff. But I only mean to say that where I have been changed is the realization of that ethereal, that incorporeal, that spirit realm. It's here all the time. You know, and it's always there, and it's something I should be cognitive of, not from a paranormal ghost hunting or any kind of perspective like that, but one of life itself, is that what would I do with my life if I knew this and this and this were so beyond it or outside the realm of what I can experience? What drips through that diaphanous haze that's between us and what we call the supernatural every now and then? And we see something will ooze its way through, and then we, again, our brains try to justify it and write it off, when we are surrounded by this stuff. And so
that's where the magic lives. And people that feel like that their life is down, that there's no joy, there's no happiness, there's no, and listen, I'm a person that's dealt with depression and anxiety my whole life. Part of what lifts me is in being aware of the butterfly wings, of being aware of these magical moments and the connectivity of each one of us. And you had a moment with Mr. Coppins that transcended life itself in an emotional connection that took you from one end of the world to the other and reconnected you with that emotion, showing you that it wasn't just grief in a second. It was something that shows that there was an actual connection, no matter how short or long a person's life is with ours and how we may touch them in their world. There's always that connection, and we should be more aware of that and take the moments to, you know, and today's a great day to talk about that, to be thankful for those moments.
I have grown to believe over the years in what I have come to term the irreplaceable moments of time, that, you know, especially when you know, like for me a few years ago, I never felt like I was in threat of death. But when you have your heart opened up on the table and stuff like that, you know, it goes through your mind, I could have died. And so you start. I didn't have a foxhole, you know, or conversion or anything, but I started to think about that. And even before that, with my children, the irreplaceable moments of time that grow so fast. And so I even take that into, I look at, I got to bring it into the biblical studies I did. We look at these patriarchs in the Bible and all these fantastic experiences with God that they have. But then you think about it and you go, no, wait, the Bible said this guy lived to be 120 years old. And it mentions one experience with God that lasted maybe 3 minutes. Did some of these guys have these mountaintop experiences, even these biblical patriarchs, just like we have, and then they move back into their daily life and they spend the next 56 years trying to find that experience again, or trying to qualify that experience or quantify it, or find the soul of it, the root of it. I had this experience and it was real, but now what? And it never happens again, or it happens in very different ways over the years. And so I think that's where I have found myself. It's that it's like, and I don't mean to be crass or overly comedic with this, but it's like sex for the first time, if it was good for you. Okay, let's just say good sex. It's like good sex. And then you go, wow, I want that every day. And 2 years later, it's like, oh, wow, that was like that one time.
Right.
And, you know, it doesn't happen every day. It you're seeking the experience that is meaningful, that means something, that's deeper. And it's really set me on a different course of the way I think, this whole experience. And I'm still trying to figure out elements of it. I still don't know all the answers to it.
And I don't think we're supposed to. I think we're supposed to. And you know what? I've taken heat from the religious sect, and people think that because sometimes I have a religious guest on and I question things, that therefore I am not Christian, or I do not questioning God, or I hate God, which it blows me away that people are that short-sighted to not see we're having a conversation, and you challenge people's ideas so that you can get a better set for understanding why they feel and say the things they do. I'm as intrigued with people's reasons for why they believe as I am with the experience that they share. And I just think that, you know, in these moments, I think my God wants me to question everything.
Yeah.
He wants me to have faith, but he wants me to be alive, and he wants me to be electric, and he wants me to see and experience as much. And the more you open up to that, the more he gives, the more your cup filleth, right? And runneth over. And I think that that's the truth. When we, everybody that's ever kind of steeped themselves, they may have had that one fleeting moment in the paranormal, and that was enough for them. And for the rest of us, it's awakened this chasm, this black hole, this void that continually needs to be filled. But for what reason is the difference, right? And I do it not out of the cheap thrill, but out of the experience of what more have you got?
Right. It's like when I was in the church, you know, that little scene where Jesus says to his disciples, hey, let the kids come to me. Let them talk to me. Let them ask me questions. Mm-hmm. Or I think in the Old English, suffer the little children to come to me. And, you know, we would look at that verse and say, well, that means the way they interpreted in the church I was in was little kids come to God the way you come to. You don't question things. You trust him and so on. I said, no. I said, I think it's the exact opposite. God is saying, what kid doesn't come with a million questions? And he's saying, come to me and ask me your questions. So I feel that I extrapolate that feeling into all of this. I say, I come with a million questions. I am a kid who has had some experiences and I don't understand this. And I want to ask more questions because I want to know answers.
So. Right. That's the magic, staying alive and asking
the
questions, putting yourself out there, not fearing that you'll humiliate. Listen, that's how we all started, by asking questions, by pushing boundaries. And as long as you do it with love and respect, have that experience for yourself. Scotty, thank you for spending some Thanksgiving time with us. I know you've got your family and things to get done, so I want to let you go. But thank you for sharing this great insight, story, and theories on the things and how they're connected. I appreciate it.
Fantastic. I thank you for letting me come on and just spill about this stuff.
Always. The door is always open to you. Friends, take care of yourselves. Be kind. Today is a day to start over, not for others, but for yourself, by giving thanks for the things that you are capable of, and being aware and in the moment today with friends and family. Truly be in it. Put your damn phone down, you know, and laugh, love, enjoy these things, because that's where you will find the magic. And once you open your heart to it, you'll find that your heart will remain open and it will start to fill more than you ever thought was possible. And that's the way we experience the supernatural. That's the way we experience life. And that's the way you will experience happiness, joy, and love. So from our family to yours, have a very happy and very safe, love-filled Thanksgiving. Thank you for tuning in to Darkness Radio.